Morning Show. Ailish Porvar, Blake Murphy, J.D. Bunkus. Follow us, tweet us, text us on the text line, which is 590-590. We're going to talk about some of your Leafs feelings, your confidence rankings, your questions. So we got this break here to talk about Leafs. Let us know how you're feeling. We got a couple things here. Kyle from Beaton. What a place. That had to be the most complete hat trick you can score. Three different dynamic goals. Hands, patience, rush, snipe. You guys are killing it, by the way. Keep up with a good show. Thanks, Kyle. That's really true. Like, it wasn't just like three rippers from the hash marks, Austin Matthews power play goals. Like, he showed his entire range of finesse. Oh, his shot is incredible. We just love Austin Matthews.
I think the most complete hat trick, though, is the Mario Lemieux hat trick, right? One at even strength, one on the power play, one on the penalty kill.
Yeah.
I had my mic off. Got to turn that sucker on to talk. That's how this works. You got to have them on is the way it goes. I like it in terms of the way you say it, but I think three even strength is the way. And or if you add one, I guess, shorthanded, that's good. The only thing about shorthanded goals is usually they're like fluky, like something stupid has happened.
Sure.
Like,
I think it's more that it shows that you're playing
all three facets. Yeah,
exactly. Like it's the Marner thing we've talked about where like, hey, he's leading you in minutes. Even strike, power play, and penalty kill. Anyway, it's a great tweet or text.
It's a good text. I will say, though, that my biggest thing that I really do want to hear from people today about the Leafs specifically is just, you know, are you feeling differently? Are you actually locking into believing? Are you surprised that you're believing? What else do you need to see? Did last night actually change that for you? Like, were you skeptical heading into last night's game? Because I asked the two of you that question before we headed into the game, right? And your answers were different, but they had a little hinge of the similar, which was, hey, you weren't going to read too much into one bad loss, but if it became a bunch of bad losses in a row against good teams, that was going to be something. Hey, it was going to be, if they won, how do they perform moving forward? Does it change the way that we've perceived some of those losses or those wins that we've been seeing recently? They are locking up so many wins. This is getting ridiculous. 13 out of 15?
15 out of 17.
15 out of 17 sounds way better than 13 out of 15. Way. It's absurd. They can't lose right now. They just can't. Every game, even again last night, it's the Colorado Avalanche, and they come to town and you go, this is going to be a test. And it did. The only thing I wish a little bit, I wish, was that it wasn't the backup goaltender, because I think the Leafs would have beat them either way.
Yeah.
And it's just going to be one of those things for people to undercut them.
It's a little asterisk on the night.
I know. It was one of those things where I go, ugh, like, does it change the mentality of the team? Yeah.
Cool. See you in January.
Right.
Exactly.
Sure. And that is it.
But now, you say they can't lose. Here's the one troubling thing for Saturday. The last 17 games, they've gone win five, lose one. Win five, lose one. Win five. This team is incapable of winning six in a row.
Blake,
I know.
I pray they do that all year long. That sounds like the
I'm
perfect,
okay with that. Yep.
They always say, oh, you got too many defensemen is the best problem to have. Yep. I would say winning five out of every six games is actually the and to keep that going throughout the playoffs. So so hit us up, 590-590. Mm-hmm. Hit us up on Instagram, hit us up on Twitter at JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar, at E Blake Murphy. Do all those things. What you got some, Blake?
Oh, I was just going to say, I looked up the Mario Lemieux hat trick.
Yeah.
He did it eight times.
Whoa.
In eight his career. Times. Yeah. Not a lot of recent ones. Only two players with multiple, two active players with multiple. Sebastian Aho and Mika Zibanejad have each done it twice.
Mika.
This is a random thing, and I'll just, like, I want to get back to the text line.
Sorry.
I don't want to do this because one guy's come on our show, but whenever I watch highlights of Lemieux versus Gretzky, I always think Lemieux is the guy that could have played today way more than Gretzky. Like that, when I see the two, I'm like, oh yeah, no, that guy, that's the now guy. That seemed like less about the era, more about the guy. That's all. That's all I'm going to say. Just from me, just from highlights and seeing old videos and remembering very little from my childhood, but that's all.
You want to make Leafs history? Yannick Perreault, 1999, last Leafs to do it.
Oof, nice.
Your move, Marner.
Yeah, do a thing. Text line.
Enzo from Vaughn.
What's up, Enzo?
I'm still not fully on board. Just something feels familiar from years past. Yesterday was great, But against a second string goalie, McKinnon just came back. You can only beat who's in front of you. But I think I'll only invest when they're in the playoffs. That stinks for me, but that's the truth of it all.
So I don't hate that.
There's a lot of validity to that, Enzo.
I don't hate that. My only thing is this, is that the Leafs are in a different place right now because they do just like, they really just need a playoff series win to get this. Like, you need one to get the next ones. Mm-hmm. But also, there is just a, I can't believe that this is happening again. I actually just view these two things actually as mutually exclusive now. The Leafs are a really good hockey team. They've just proven that. Now this is just, they've proven that year over year over year. Whether we find out something about the group is flawed and whether they just, you know, cannot do it in the playoffs, mm-hmm. fine. We'll find that out. But I'm starting to come off that belief. I think, again, I've said this before, but that Marner is the biggest question mark. When Marner is going, the team is different. When Blake, you're mentioning all four of those guys don't need to be going on every single night. Yeah, that's true, because you do have those three. You just need to have a couple of them going on any given night, and you can probably beat other teams. The way Jack Campbell's playing, all the depth, all that stuff. Still, to me, the biggest playoff question mark is whether or not Marner can be similar to the player he's been in the regular season, because the last couple of playoffs, he has not been that way. Basically, since he blocked that shot against the Bruins in 2019, Marner has not been the same guy in the playoffs. And it has become something that is so big to him that the general manager of the hockey team had to pull him aside and talk to him in a private meeting during a playoff series.
A private meeting with Amazon Prime.
Yeah, I know. So stupid. So stupid. Honestly, that if we want to criticize moves Kyle Dubas has made, that's got to be high on the list. Like, hey, guy that's really struggling and dealing with mental, I'm going to bring you in my office and show off to these Amazon cameras about how forward-thinking I am. And here you go. And he walked out of there like, what is happening? Why did you do
more
this to
more hockey
me?
Players on the take from Amazon.
Yeah. So Marner, to me, is the biggest playoff question. I really do believe in Jack Campbell. He did it last year. He was great. He did let in the one bad goal in the game seven. But come on. Like, they didn't perform in game seven. They were broken ever since Galchenyuk threw that pizza.
Yeah. And if you give up one bad goal in a playoff series, an entire seven-game playoff series, I think you're okay.
But that is still those are the big questions. Marner, can he replicate it? And two is, if something like last night happens where the other team gives you the pushback, because that happens in hockey, right? Like, I hate when people go, oh, well, the second period, they weren't very, yeah, the whole point of this game is sometimes the other team grabs momentum. Sometimes they grab possession. They grab control of the play. It's this like weird thing that people have where they go, yeah, but what about they weren't the better team in the one period? Like, yeah, they didn't play a full 60 minutes. It's like, that's not what playing a full 60 minutes is. Playing a full 60 minutes doesn't mean that you dominate the entire game. It's that you don't fall apart when the other team is playing well. And when they were playing well, the Leafs didn't fall apart. When they actually had their moments, they didn't fall apart. Can they do that in the playoffs?
And this is where, you know, these games against other top opponents should really kind of affirm your confidence, because, yeah, it's not a 60-minute game is not just, oh, you're dominant, because what people would say then is, well, that team was really bad. It's the old wrestling thing of the stronger you make your opponent look, the moreover you get in beating them.
Everything's the old wrestling thing, eh?
Yeah. Today it is. Yeah, well, I missed my wrestling last night.
Well, I also pictures. Just think that there's something, and again, Enzo, this isn't a shot at you, but
Enzo.
Great wrestling name, by the way.
All right, you've now hit your wrestling cap for the day. That's enough. That's too many.
That was six in the first hour.
Yeah, I was like, yeah,
that's
it. That's the cap. You hit the cap. The salary cap for wrestling today is like, we actually have to have like a thing, like a clicker. Beep. Like, hey, how many things do you do for wrestling things? I just think that that's no way to live. You're just waiting. If you're just sitting there and you're waiting for any time the Leafs lose a game to a good opponent and you go, see, that's what happens when they lose to the good opponent, or I told you so, or that. I believe that there are some people out there, and I get it because I like being right too, but there are some people out there who have staked their belief in this Leafs team being chokers and flawed and blah, 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 blah. And they're seeing what's happening right now. And even though they call themselves Leafs fans, there's a part of them that's like afraid that the Leafs are going to win because that meant that they were wrong and they got out and they actually sold some stock. They sold some equity. And everybody that's a real Leaf fan knows that they have that friend in their group. They know they have that friend in their group that's trying to undercut it, that's trying to not believe in this, and this is trying to take away the joy of this moment from people. And all I will say is, again, if you really don't believe that they can win in the playoffs, I don't think that you're paying attention at this point. I really don't.
And if you're that person in the friend group, like, first of all, it's a safe place to shoot from because 29 teams aren't going to win the cup. So
yeah, but it's more about a playoff series. I know. Right? Like, yeah, that's it's at this point, the Stanley Cup, I hate to say this, is like there's two Stanley Cups for the Leafs this year. Win one playoff series then winning a Stanley Cup.
Lots of texts coming in here. So let's keep going here. Melissa from Ajax.
Hey, Melissa.
I am happy that this is happening for Leafs Nation. However, our defense is a concern. They need to somehow pick up a veteran Stanley Cup winning defenseman to help them in the playoffs. Our subs are not up to par.
What do you think about that, Ailish?
There's a lot of young, inexperienced defense. Travis Dermott scored a goal last night, which is shocking. Uh-huh. But we've got Dermott, Sandin. Where did Liljegren? I haven't heard from him in years.
Well, no, but that's just because he's been, he being Keefe, is doing the, like, cycle them through.
Yeah.
And
they haven't been bad, but they haven't, I don't think that they've been, what is like a positive influences other than Sandin. Sandin has been great.
Yeah. And that's why confident. Paul Dermott, Liljegren are kind of in and out.
And they're kind of meh, but Sandin has completely blown away my expectations this year. Like I thought he was still going to be a little bit nervous, you know, getting into his NHL footing, but he's looked great. I think somebody with a little bit of a Stanley Cup winning defenseman pedigree, you can't say that that's a bad thing.
So
but Justin Hall has kind of fallen back out of my happiness ratings.
Is Melissa that wrote this text?
Melissa, yeah.
So here's where I'm at with it. As good as Sandin has been and as good as those like younger guys have been together, the minutes have been super sheltered, like super, super, super sheltered. And there have been some like really scary moments where they've been in their own end. So I can totally see where you're coming from because in the playoffs, the minutes are not.
Yeah, you don't get to say, we're going to just rest you for a bit.
This isn't playing Anaheim on, you know, their back-to-back on a set. You know, that so there's just that. That's out the window. Mm-hmm. I think that it's pretty clear that adding what you're asking for is always a good thing. Like, no one's ever going to push back if you're like, hey, you know what the Leafs should add is a veteran Stanley Cup winning defenseman who you trust when they're on the ice. Like, who's the person that's going to be like, absolutely not, Melissa? No, 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 no. The Michael Scott, no, 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 please God, no. So, yeah, I would like to see them at it. I do believe that the way that the Leafs are playing this season, they're going to be very much in the mix come trade deadline. That some people have thought because they made the trade for Foligno that maybe they'd be a little gun shy, that Dubas's record, they're like trading picks. Maybe they'd like some picks. They need some talent because the farm system hasn't been that great. They're in it to win it. They were doing that last year. They're going to do this year. I would guess that if they have a priority come deadline time, that it'll be still another top six forward that they can grab that gives them some offensive punch. Someone that they can say, hey, you know what? We're going splashy here. Or they add that defenseman. Those are the two things, barring a goaltending injury like last year.
And Luke from Newmarket just brought up a good point. Luke? Didn't they just do that last year with Bogosian?
Yeah, they did. But yeah. Bogosian didn't want to play here.
He would have been great.
Yeah, but he wanted to live in the States. He was done living in Canada with the with all the different restrictions. He wanted to go back to the United States. Mm-hmm. You saw, if you watched the Amazon series, they specifically highlighted how difficult it was for him to be away from his family. Yeah. And he wanted to go back, so he did. But yes, a Bogosian type would be good for them. Not just because necessarily like that guy has to play during the regular season. It might not be someone that people are enamored with immediately, but having versatility with your lineup is always a good thing. And that is, I would say, my major issue with the blue line.
They can't really shake much else up.
And the Hall thing is the biggest problem to me, is that Justin Hall keeps trying to take on this role of a guy that he's not. And it just... You're not that guy, dude. You're just not that guy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have much on that other than what you guys just laid out. I think, you know, the top six forward thing is interesting, but given the way the depth's played, you know, I it's one of those things always too where like it's like what's available on the market, right? Like if you might want a top six forward to slide in there, and then suddenly a right-handed defenseman who can play on the second pair shakes loose, and that's a better price. I do think it's interesting that the, you know, obviously there's the salary cap component of this too, of how much salary can you take on, but the Leafs are in a position where they have a couple of movable mid-size salaries, like a Richie, like a Hall, who I think has a modified no trade with a short list, and then even, you know, I'm excited about how Mikheyev could look on this third line, but that's another guy that that kind of fits that. So you have, you know, you're not in a situation where you necessarily have to pull from the farm or pull from the draft to make those moves. You've got some of those kind of low tier salaries to piece together.
Todd and Caledon East. Morning, guys. I completely expected the Leafs to be flat and get slapped around last night. First game after a road trip, mm-hmm. typical of Toronto on a Wednesday night. I am shocked they played as well as they did. I'm all in again, though we do still need a defenseman.
He's beginning to believe.
That's it.
Todd's back in, baby.
Come on in.
Woo!
Come on into the tent.
Come on in, Toddy.
It's warm in here.
It's a big tent.
We got hot chocolate.
You know what? That's something I haven't had since last winter time is hot chocolate. I might get hot chocolate today.
May I share a personal story that's not hockey?
Sure.
Sure.
Okay, forget it.
No, all I do is talk about food on this show.
It was just a weird set. You were like, may I share a personal
story? Well, I want to build off the hot chocolate. And
yeah,
the
just tell
us.
Go for it.
Just say you have a hot chocolate. Just say it. Don't ask for permission.
It's only hot chocolate adjacent.
Yeah.
So I worked at a place in high school in Cambridge. It used to be called Grand Valley Fortifiers. I don't know what it's called now. But it was like a farm feed and like bird seed and lawn care place. And every Christmas we would have a live nativity scene. So there'd be like a camel out front. And
a real camel.
Like my friends from high school would always come and like
feed the
camel.
How'd they get camels
in
Drumbo?
This is in Cambridge, but
same
yeah.
stuff.
I mean, African lion safari is right down the road. If you can have elephants and stuff, you can have a camel. But for like all of December, every year there was free hot apple cider for like every customer, which was nice. And I don't really like apple cider, but
I do.
It's a very Christmassy vibe. So when hot chocolate comes up, that's immediately where I go.
I like a hot apple cider.
JD's really upset with me.
I also like this text.
I'm not upset with you.
This text from David from Thornhill. Do you trade Mrazek for the cap space to re-sign Campbell and let Wall be the backup?
In the offseason, 100%.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
The issue is Mrazek's not going to have any chance to rehab his value between now and the... Like, he could be headed for a conditioning stint soon and be back in the mix. But, like, if you're a team that's looking at 3 years, $3.8 million, you got to see kind of proof of concept here on Mrazek being healthy and still effective.
I don't think that you even if Mrazek comes back and he's amazing and he looks great, there's no chance you're trading him this year. You want 1,000,000,000% both guys.
Yeah, you need both guys.
I love Joe
Wall.
Yeah.
He's been great, but he's not, I'm not putting him in the playoffs.
No, that's, you're still a Jack, if you're a Jack Campbell injury away from Joe Wall, then you're a couple away again from Michael Hutchinson. And yeah, either way, you're not putting in a kid into a playoff series with all the hopes of a tortured franchise on his shoulders. Like, that's just awful. That's abuse.
Leafs thing to like, we found a good deal for Mrazek and like it addresses the right side of the defense or whatever.
And then Campbell gets hurt.
Yeah. And
no, but that's it. But my point is like, look at what the Leafs did last year. They had Freddie Anderson and they had Jack Campbell and Freddie. They must've had some pretty good inclination that he was going to work his way back. At some point, we've looked at everything, and it seems as though a lot of his injury was he could play through it, and some of it seemed mental,
and maybe a little cap,
right? So, but they went out and they added another goaltender. I think it's actually more likely. Seriously, I think it's more likely that at the deadline the Leafs add another Riddick type than it is that they would subtract a Mrazek. 100%. I'm not saying that they'll do either. I'm just saying that it's a 0%er, a 0.00000%er that they trade Mrazek for reasons of we're going to go with Wall as the backup in the playoffs.
Or even Hutchinson.
0.00000%. Again, though, I feel like people are texting in trade deadline talk. Like, tell me what you believe in. Tell me what you believe in with this team. Tell me what you're seeing differently. Tell me why you believe in this team if you do. If you don't, that's cool. You can keep saying the thing about the third thing. But yeah, we'll do the trade deadline show come trade deadline day.
One small note. Mrazek per Sheldon Keefe is expected to get some work in with the Marlies this weekend.
Yeah.
Okay. That's close.
It's still called Grand Valley Fortifier. Still there.
Oh, sweet.
Side note.
Nice.
Once Mikheyev comes back, where does he fit in? Do you think he changes anything about this winning streak? Brandon from Ajax.
I want him on that third line. Kasha skated the other day too, so it doesn't sound. I know they put him on IR yesterday to create a spot, but that's retroactive, so he can be back as soon as Saturday. I love the idea of Mikheyev, Kampf, Kasha.
Yeah.
So do I.
Especially with Mikheyev having all the, like, before his injury, it was, I want to play, I want to make an impact, I'm here to play in a top two line situation, or I want to be traded. Mm-hmm. And he had all this conversation, like, this is your prove it season, this is it. And then obviously the injury was unfortunate, but I think he comes back with a vengeance that he's still trying to say, I want to be a part of this team and actually contribute, or I don't want to play here.
Yeah, and if Bunting and Kerfoot weren't playing as well as they were, maybe you make the case of, hey, this guy wanted more opportunity, and here's, you know, there's pressure playing with Matthews and Marner, with Tavares mm-hmm. and Nylander, but it's also, you know, it's a little easier to hit the ground running maybe, but those guys are playing well, and mm-hmm. I don't see a case for breaking that up. The question, I guess, is that flows from there is Richie Pressbox bound at that point?
Yeah, oh my God, I think please. That he's very, 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 very clearly the number one Pressbox candidate at this point. I will say that something that has been missed a little bit from yesterday is that the Leafs haven't missed a beat without Kasha. And I would have thought that had they mm-hmm. lost him, that it would at least have some type of a ripple down the lineup. And granted, they've scored a ton since he's been out. They were a team that was playing in these really tight hockey games, and they were barely squeaking out. They were dominant, but they were barely winning on the score sheet. They were winning by a goal. They were winning by two goals. Lately, they've been just firing a million in the net. So that really does change the math. Mm-hmm. But Kasha has not felt missed at all to me. Like, I haven't had one moment where I've gone, boy, you'd like to have Kasha here. And he was one of their better players for the first part of the season. So I really do think that that speaks to something that when we talk to Colby later, because we have Colby Armstrong in the 9 o'clock hour, he's someone who has said in the past about things I agreed with, that other teams, the Leafs have had such an identity in that core four players that they haven't had other things to lean on. Like when things go south, it's been different this year. It really has felt different. And now Kasha, like knowing that he's a luxury item and not a necessity, mm-hmm. or at least feeling a little bit more like he's a luxury item and not a necessity, because it's only three games that he's been out, right? Three. That is a really comforting feeling.
That's huge.
That is a really comforting feeling, because there was a point in the year where I thought, man, when this guy gets hurt, the team is going to look very different. And when Kampf went down with that injury, you thought, man, the team is really going to look different. They had games without either of those guys. Nothing looked different.
Yeah, the only thing really different last night, it was my concern heading in, and it didn't end up being a thing.
Dissipated immediately, right?
Yeah, and like they didn't play that camp line with Joey Anderson and Pierre Engvall mm-hmm. quite as heavy a top matchup and defensive load as we've seen from that camp Kasha line. But again, part of that, I think, was the strategy of like, let's make McKinnon's minutes really difficult mm-hmm. first time back. People seem to want to talk trade deadline stuff.
They really do.
We're not going to do that. But
we already did. They already won.
Yeah. I do
You're
have
like, we're not going to do that as the horse is like out of the barn and merely like,
the camel yeah. is out of
the
little
cider factory
in front of Grand Valley Board of Buyers. It's time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. And we're going to chew on a little something trade related. Not a lot of Raptor stuff going on today as they continue to lose and be very injured. But the news came down for the NBA last night that the Miami Heat will forfeit their next second-round pick.
Yum, yum, yum.
Because of the tampering they did with Kyle Lowry. And for anyone who needs the refresher, the Heat had a deal lined up with Kyle Lowry immediately, and the Raptors had a sign-and-trade with them almost immediately as well. Every team does this. Every team talks to free agents. The forfeiting a second-round pick is an incredible just slap on the wrist, because if you're Miami and Chicago got forfeited one as well for Lonzo Ball and they're tampering there, like you don't really care. Like a second round pick, if you're the Heat, like you're expecting that to be in the 50s and you got Kyle Lowry, like who cares? Mm-hmm. The one thing is like, if you're the Raptors, you're like, could we have not waited one day and you just give us the second round pick instead of throwing it out? So I saw there was interesting reaction to this yesterday. And there was the reaction of, oh, well, that's not harsh enough. Or, hey, the Raptors are not made whole anyway in this. Or, hey, why weren't the Raptors punished? Because they agreed to the sign and trade too. They were obviously violating the rules. I think this is just kind of a warning shot from the league before, you know, they did the same thing with the Bucks a year ago when they did the Bogdanović thing and forfeited a second round pick. It's really nothing. It's as slap on the wrist as it gets. But I do wonder if we're headed toward a little bit more of a structured way to prevent teams from doing this, or at least like the league just begging, stop leaking to Woj and Shams at 12:01. Like, just please stop. Because this whole thing is a farce where it looks like it's going to be a serious investigation and an actual punishment. And then months later, it's like, oh yeah, you lost what'll probably be like the 55th pick in the draft.
Hmm. Do other leagues have this issue?
I can't speak to the NHL. I would imagine that there's some element of it. Baseball doesn't have the same timeline you operate on. So I don't think baseball runs into it quite as much, because there's not that like July 1st frenzy that the NBA has. It makes for good news and good social media, but
and something for you to chew on.
Yeah, something for you to chew on. Stop leaking it at 12:01 and you won't have to give up picks for no reason.
Shams is like, I'll pay for that second pick.
Yeah.
It's like, that second pick is I'll cover that bill. Yeah. That one comes across the table. I'll grab that one.
Yeah. And like at that point, you could just sign the guy undrafted in a lot of cases anyway. Speaking of CBA stuff and little loopholes and hey, what does the baseball CBA look like? We're going to talk to Jeff Blair of Blair and Barker after the break. We're going to talk to him about, hey, we're in a freeze now, so the Jays moves are done for the time being. And what does it look like when we come out of this? And we're going to talk, unfortunately, a little bit of MLB labor stoppage. That's next with Jeff Blair on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan.
It's time for another Maple Leafs ticket giveaway. We are giving you a chance to win tickets to the Maple Leafs Lightning game on December 9th. Today's code word is PUCK. Text PUCK to 590-590 for your shot to win.
Good morning. Blake Murphy. That's Ailish Forfar. Saying good morning three
good morning,
times.
Good morning.
He's JD Bunkus. For a second there, I was the only one without my hood up. Are you guys cold again?
Yeah, it's a bit chilly.
Yeah, it's chilly today.
Unbelievable. You guys gotta get better.
It's a weird room. There's ghosts in this room. Just like they make it cold.
It's dry.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's haunted.
It might be
the keg mansion down the street, definitely haunted.
That's
but I don't
true.
Know
yeah,
if they maybe
creepy.
I walk by it every morning.
Yeah.
It's so creepy at like 5 in the morning. And I do wonder now that you mention it, I wonder if they follow me in here. They need their Leafs takes.
Speaking of ghosts of the past,
how
did you guys feel watching Robbie Ray and Marcus Semien? I just felt it was a little bit. Hey, you know, that Tim and Friends account is a really good account. It's a really good account. Like, it's unbelievably good to the point where I always have questions as to how many people are on that social media team. Yesterday when they posted the Robbie Ray, Marcus Semien thing, I thought, hey, you know, this is, I'm reporting this. I was like, I reported it to Instagram.
Send it. You're like, I don't like this content.
Yes,
it
I don't like this
explicit.
Content.
Targeted harassment.
Yeah, exactly. This is harassment. I'll just say this. I weirdly felt, I thought I would feel way worse about seeing Semien in the other jersey and that Ray would be fine with the Gausman thing. I felt bad about both. I felt like sneaky bad about both.
I didn't feel that bad about Semien because like he had just big like cartoon wads of cash coming out of his pockets.
Get that bag, King. He got that bag.
Get that bag.
Like that one's, the price ended up being so far beyond what I expected the Jays were willing to pay. Like I think we had made more peace with that. The Ray one's a little weirder.
Yeah, the Ray one hurt more for me, especially because of his award-winning season. Mm-hmm. He seemed like there was a chance. It just seemed a little bit closer to the heart. Semien, as soon as we knew Semien was going to make that bag king, I already cut him out of my heart.
Oh, wow.
Just like, I ripped the Band-Aid.
Cut him out of your heart.
You send the text, we're breaking up, bye. But Robbie Ray just lingered a bit more.
I like this. Ailish's batting order in the manager's office is not like those magnets that's removable.
Yeah.
Semien is just scratched out with like a knife.
See, what I pictured is, you know how in the movies when the tough guy, the criminal, tries to show how fearless they are, how unaffected they are, and they put out like, they have a cigarette and then they just like put it out on their own arm or in their hand?
That's me.
That's what I... That's what I pictured with Ailish. Old tough guy Ailish.
Trying to hurt me about my sports teams?
Yeah, yeah.
We're talking ourselves into the Leafs over here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so the Toronto Blue Jays also introduced Kevin Gausman yesterday over Zoom. We're going
Like a nice guy, eh?
Yeah, he does. Yeah. And that's the book on him. Alex Wood had a lot of nice things to say. Caleb Joseph was on our show and had some nice things to say. Giving us a little bit more and talking about what's next for the Blue Jays. Jeff Blair of Blair and Barker. Jeff, good morning.
Morning, folks. How are you?
Oh, we're doing well. How are you?
I am good. Loving the lockout already.
That makes one of ya.
Yeah. So let's start there and not get too specific, but how comical to you is it, if not expected, that MLB has already just like made this grand statement, we're going to lose the PR battle of this lockout. That stuff gets leaked about them wanting to scale back pension. They change MLB.com to have no stories about current players on the page anywhere at all. Go open up MLB.com and look at what's on there. Jeff, right away, MLB is like, nope, we're not going to have anyone on our side. This is going to be a pro-labor, pro-union PR thing.
Yeah, and that's usually the case.
Yeah.
You know, the MLB, the thing with the website is fascinating because this is the first labor stoppage of the social media age. And that's the only thing that worries me about it. Like this, as someone who's covered these things since 1989, I can tell you this is the lamest lead up to a lockout or stoppage I've seen in my life. This is literally ownership saying, we don't want to lose any games. This is players saying, we know you don't want to lose any games. And everybody's looking at each other and saying, nothing happens in December anyhow, even when the CBA's in place. Let's just kind of take some time off. And that's kind of where we are. And my one concern is the PR battle. MLB.com didn't exist in 1994. Guess what? The Players Association have their own website as well. Guess what? They've hired people, including a fellow named Jerry Krasnick, a longtime baseball writer, to be their PR guy. So you're going to see a lot of back and forth here. At the end of the day, none of it matters. Opening day is going to be opening day. And Max Scherzer, what did Max Scherzer say yesterday? He talked about how much fun the last 2 weeks were. I can guarantee you that guys like Tom Glavine, who were involved in negotiations in 1994, at no point did they ever say, oh my God, this is a great year. So I'm not worried in the slightest about this lockout.
Well, that's great to hear. You mentioned nothing happens in December anyway. A lot happened in November and December 1st, I guess. The Blue Jays got Kevin Gausman, obviously. Robbie Ray and Marcus Semien are out. Yimi Garcia's in. And then we found out kind of at the buzzer yesterday that Chris Taylor is going to stick around with the Dodgers. So if you're resetting the Blue Jays coming out of the lockout, whenever that is, it looks like there's still a hole in the infield. And it sounds a little bit like they're, you know, well, not a little bit. They're definitely going to need to address that in some way. How do you see the Blue Jays' priorities stacking up when we come out of this? Is infield the biggest spot? Is getting a little more competition for that fifth starter spot the biggest thing? What are they trying to accomplish when they kind of get the starter's pistol out of this?
I mean, there are going to be so many bargain basement pitchers available that I'd be willing to bet the Blue Jays end up going out and signing three or four more guys to compete for the fifth starter spot. And it's not going to cost them a lot of money. Now, they may not all be good, but that's neither here nor there. I think the real focus for the Blue Jays is going to continue to be diversifying their lineup. I would suggest they need two hitters. I don't think Randall Grichuk can start the season on your roster. I'd rather have somebody like Michael Conforto, a left-handed bat, profiles a little differently than some of the other guys you have in your team. And yeah, there's an opening in the infield, be it at second base or third base. I find it intriguing that Trevor Story has quietly told teams that he would consider moving to third base for the right contract. That is intriguing because, you know, if I'm the Blue Jays, the only way I'm moving Bo Bichette off shortstop is if Carlos Correa comes here. So I think you're going to see the Jays add that left-handed hitting outfielder who does a bunch of stuff they don't have in the lineup. And then they're just basically going to go for the best third baseman they can find, be it Kyle Seager, Jose Ramirez, or Trevor Story. And I think those will be the major moves. And I wouldn't be surprised, because everything I'm hearing is they were in on a couple of relievers. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't go after one more guy as a reliever, either through the trade market or the free agent market, that really makes people sit up and take attention.
Were you surprised? Oh, sorry. Were you surprised there was no action yesterday for Toronto? And were they at all close on the Chris Taylor deal? Because that was something we floated around here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how close they were in Chris Taylor. Everybody I spoke to said Chris Taylor wanted to stay with the Dodgers. And his agent acted that way. I at no point did I really consider Chris Taylor a viable alternative. Look, I was told that they were close on somebody else yesterday. I was told that there was some thought that maybe they could get, you know, medicals done on somebody ahead of the deadline. That didn't happen. I don't know if that means they revisit it. I don't know if that means the dude is sort of technically signed, but they can't announce it. And I certainly don't. Well, I don't know the identity. It could be anybody. There's a lot of players out there. It doesn't necessarily have to be somebody, you know, somebody of huge significance.
Could be Trevor Story, though. Could be.
you know what? My sense is if it was Trevor Story, yeah, it might have already leaked out.
Yeah.
But who knows?
So, yeah, the Chris Taylor thing, I think a lot of people got their hopes up for it. And, yeah, the Dodgers, after losing the guys that they've lost, it would have seemed pretty wild if they also lost out on Chris Taylor. One of the names that got mentioned yesterday that was like internal, right? Because we've done this whole thing of, hey, the Jays need infield help, but they also need depth. And that was brought up with the departure of Breivik Valera. And we had Shy on yesterday, and he was sort of bringing up some names and saying, hey, the Jays do have internal options they like, but one of the names was Otto Lopez. And I'm like, there's just no way that the Blue Jays can be leaning on Otto Lopez this year, can it? But the one name of intrigue was Kevin Biggio, because his season was so weird and his Blue Jays career now has been so up and down. I wonder if you're buying the inevitable Biggio buildup that's going to happen here.
No.
Yeah.
He has the same flaws as a hitter now that he had 2 years ago. And he is what he is. That if, you know, in a perfect world, if the Jays decide that they are going to go with a platoon of Santiago Espinal and Kevin Biggio at second, or Otto Lopez and Kevin Biggio at second, I'm okay with that. It's not going to make an impact one way or another. I mean, we're basically talking about who's going to hit eighth or ninth in the lineup. So there's some stuff I might lose sleep over if I'm a Blue Jays fan. Kevin Biggio, Otto Lopez, it's not one of them. Like if you make other moves, fine, have them on the team. Mm-hmm. But let's not sort of pretend that the light's going to go on with Kevin Biggio this year. He's not 19 or 20 years old. Yeah. Kevin Biggio is what he is. You get him out the same way now that you got him out 2 years ago. And, you know, that's kind of where I am. I just think he's a guy now.
So, and reading into that, do you think that maybe adding those depth pieces is going to be less of a priority? Like that we could end up seeing those like options come internal? Because again, at the end of the year, a lot of the discussion was, hey, they're going to need some budget because they really want to improve the depth of this team. They want to have more options. They don't want to get into a situation where they're leaning on guys that are quad A players during big stretches of the year. They want to improve the bench. Like, do you think the bench is as much of a priority as we thought it was going to be heading in?
I never thought it was going to be a priority. And if you build your team right, if you get Jose Ramirez, and you've got Jose Ramirez, Vladdy, Bo, Teoscar, I don't know, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., whoever's going to be in left field, where's your bench going to play? Who are you going to pinch hit for? You going to pinch hit for Ramirez? No. You going to pinch hit for Bo? No. You going to pinch hit for Vladdy? No. Do you want somebody who can catch the ball at first base in the days you give Vladdy time off? Yeah. If you build the team right and you manage to diversify your offense enough in terms of your everyday lineup, I really don't care who's on the bench, to be honest. I just don't. And I don't think the Jays are at the point now where they can look at bench depth. They've still got to address their everyday lineup. And as I said, then if you've got Santiago Espinal and Otto Lopez and Kevin Biggio and they're in your bench with maybe Alejandro Kirk or whoever's the backup catcher, get another outfielder who can catch the ball. You know, I mean, I'm fine with that. I think there's way more to worry about and way more to focus on right now than the bench. And again, there's going to be a ton of players looking for work quickly when lockout's over. And you are going to get somebody really cheap who might be able to have an impact. That person's probably going to fall to you.
So I wanted to ask you about how a front, and maybe that answers it, and patience is the key here, and then throwing a lot of darts. But functionally, how does a front office proceed from here with this, with the lockout taking place? Is there enough uncertainty about what's to come where a front office might pause it and want to reevaluate, hey, what are we doing in the new landscape? Or is this basically, you know, kind of, hey, this is eventually going to get resolved. It's not going to look that different. We can use this time to do our due diligence and be ready to hit the ground running right out of it.
I mean, it depends on the front office. I don't think the Blue Jays, I don't think anything changes for them. You know, Mark Shapiro has been around a long time. He's pretty well wired into the commissioner's office. I mean, a lot of us think that he's going to be the commissioner eventually anyhow and replace Rob Manfred once Rob gets tired of this. The only thing that would concern me as a Blue Jays fan is that as part of the horse trading, free agency comes a little earlier for Vladdy and Bo. And I'm not saying that I think that's going to happen. I'm saying I think it's a possibility. And at the end of the day, a lot of stuff gets left on the cutting room floor. But for a team like the Blue Jays, I would be surprised if there's any impact out of this. The teams to watch, and I think the teams that are really biting their nails now, are the big market teams like the Yankees and the Dodgers. Because if, as part of all the horse trading that goes on, you wake up one morning and suddenly find out that the competitive balance tax is $40 million less than you thought it would be, now if you're some of these teams, if you're the Yankees, and at some point you're going to probably have to give Aaron Judge $300 million, now you got to start sweating. And now you got to think, okay, how are we going to approach this? Conversely, if there isn't that big a change, you know, there's a reason Carlos Correa hasn't signed yet. Carlos Correa knows at some point one of two things is going to happen. Either the new CBA is going to be favorable to the big teams and somebody's going to come along like the Phillies. I don't see the Yankees doing it with them, but maybe the Phillies, and offer him the type of contract he wants. Or things are going to get dicey and Carlos Correa is going to say, you know what, maybe I take that offer that's on the table from Houston. Or maybe I sign someplace and go back or go there for 2 years with a bunch of vesting clauses and a bunch of options. So I think the only teams that will be affected by this are the big market teams. And as I said, I think that's why you see Carlos Correa not rushing into anything, because I think his agent sitting there thinking to himself, once this settles, the big boys are going to want to pony up for my guy. So far they haven't, but once this thing is done, they're going to start calling him, about him, because Carlos Correa is right now is the guy that wins you a World Series. He's the guy that tips the balance of favor, the balance of, you know, he tips the balance in your favor. He's the only guy out there. There's literally any team that has pretensions of winning or ideas of winning would look at Carlos Correa.
Young sports fan me would hate this, but I am absolutely rooting for the big clubs. Absolutely. I want it so that there is as little competitive balance or whatever in all my leagues as possible. That's my biggest gripe with the NHL, with the salary caps. And it's the one thing that keeps baseball. I don't want to say the one thing, but yeah, one of the things that I love the most about baseball is that there is no salary cap, that these teams that are supposed to be great remain great. And they at least have the pressure to spend money and be at the top of the heap. So you already sort of outlined it okay, sorry,
I'm
go ahead. Yeah.
No, I'm with you. Baseball's better when the Yankees are good and everybody hates them.
It just is. Yeah, I really don't want to live in a world where it's easier for teams like the Oakland Athletics to, you know, be around where the Yankees are. Like, I'm sorry, I just don't care.
Yeah, I hear you.
You said the thing about Vlad and Bo, that's the major concern if you're a Blue Jays fan, is that's what ends up happening here, is you lose service time for them. That ends up being the shifting equation. Is there anything else from this? Because you said it. This is more about the big clubs versus the small clubs, this CBA negotiation. But is there anything in particular that if you're a Blue Jays fan, you should be paying attention to? Or can you just check out and say, hey, Blair, call me when this thing's all settled?
Yeah. I mean, I've looked at this. I've tried to compare it to 1994. I covered the Expos then. We all know what happened to the Expos. This is odd because when the new agreement comes into place, baseball's probably coming back to Montreal in 5 years. We'll probably, I mean, the Tampa Bay, Montreal split cities concept that everybody seems to think is going to happen now. So you've got that. You've got the Blue Jays spending a lot of money in the lead up to this. You know, the 1994 strike really killed baseball to a certain degree in Montreal and Toronto, and it's kind of odd that now I would suggest that the Blue Jays are probably going to be in a great position coming out of this new CBA, whatever it looks like, and we'll see baseball going back to Montreal. Listen, one thing I've kind of figured out about Blue Jays ownership lately, and you know, I'm not going to be a shill here for Rogers, but they kind of do what they say they're going to do. And if Mark Shapiro is sending out signals that, you know what, we're ready to react to the new CBA. If something happens, if you've got some combination of age base / service time as, you know, the designator for free agency, we're ready to take a shot at signing Bo and Vladdy long term. So, yeah, I'm not, from the Blue Jays' point of view, other than something outrageous, right, where free agency, guys get free agency at the age of 23 or 24 or something like that, I don't really find a great deal to worry about here. And believe me, I've spent time looking to be a pessimist about this, and I just can't. I think this organization is perfectly positioned, and if there was at all any concern, you wouldn't have seen them go after Kevin Gausman. I think that in and of itself is a sign of the intentions of this ownership group. And the other thing percolating in the background here is, I keep saying this, and I know it drives people around the bend, but at some point in the next 3 years, we are going to be talking about a new stadium or rejigging the Rogers Center. And if you're the Blue Jays, it would really help if, as part of that discussion, you've got a team that is challenging for the World Series. So I think baseball in Toronto is, frankly, in a better place now than it's been since 1993. And that ain't going to change as a result of the CBA.
Jeff Blair, Blair and Barker, you can catch more from him 10 to 12 the rest of this week. Jeff, thanks so much for taking the time this morning.
Thanks, folks.
Thanks, Blair.
It's Jeff Blair. Major League Baseball is at a labor stoppage. The NHL is not.
And you had something there, JD.
I do.
You got 10 seconds to spit it out. It's not possible for you.
So when I first came here, Jeff Blair was, still might be, my favorite radio host. Like, I loved listening to his show.
You're just sucking up to him because comes in right after us and you're scared.
Little part of that. But I say this as kindly as possible. If Blair is optimistic, boy, that's good for the Jays.
That's a great feeling.
Like, that is really good for the Jays, baby. Like, that, nothing hyped me up more than that. Because it's one thing for us to do it, a bit, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, I'm looking for Blair to be neutral. Yeah. And I'm like, let's go.
Good. Yeah. Yeah.
I feel you on that.
Because that guy, like, when he said he didn't want to be a show for Rod, that guy doesn't.
No, that's the furthest thing.
Literally the furthest guy from it. That's why I love having Blair on as a radio guest, too, is because he's like, no, this is how it actually is. That's why the Biggio question, he's like, nah. He's like, I'm not going to try to sell you on Gavin Biggio.
Otto Lopez.
Yeah, exactly. But him being optimistic about the Blue Jays is muy bueno for the Blue Jays. Sorry, I had to get that in.
Muy bueno for you, the listener.
We're giving away a pair of tickets to the Leafs' December 9th home game against the Tampa Bay Lightning. All you have to do is download today's episode of the Fan Morning Show and listen for the code word that's placed somewhere in the podcast. Once you've located that code word, text it to 590-590 and you'll be entered for a chance to win. The winner will be announced tomorrow morning, Friday, December 3rd. So if you want to see the Leafs on their hot, hot, hot streak against the Tampa Bay Lightning, just listen for that sneaky little code word and text it to us and you could win.
We'll talk about those red-hot Toronto Maple Leafs a little bit more after the break with Nick Kyprios of Real Kipper and Born. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan.